So, Dimitri, you grew up in New Jersey, correct?
Yes.
Was it close to the Jersey Shore at all?
Exactly. That's exactly where I'm from.
Are there a lot of dingleberries there?
Douchebags, weirdos, scumbags, idiots. There's like all these different varieties. It's a really special place.
Could you foresee that this was going to be a cultural craze?
No. It's funny. I left there and I forgot about a lot of the things I didn't like about where I'm from. And then they got popular. That show became this popular show, I guess in Canada too, but in the States for sure. And it just reminded me of people from my high school and what I got away from. So it was kind of annoying to see it chasing me.
When you were just starting out in comedy, was there ever a point where your family told you to get a haircut and a real job?
To my face, never anything about the haircut. Oh, yeah, actually, they did say that, yeah. I'd say they said both things pretty frequently. I forgot. Like my grandmother and my uncle, I think even my mom, people were like, yeah, you should get a haircut. And then everybody mostly said, go back to law school.
Wow.
You're making a mistake. What are you doing? This is really, really unsupportive. Kind of crazy.
And now you're just like, check it out, all right?
Yeah, the funny thing with my family is they went from kind of making fun of me for doing comedy to resenting me. That now I think I'm like some big hotshot. I was like, well, there's no middle part where it was like, hey, you know, good job. Yeah, we're proud of you. That's good. It was just, now it's like, oh, Mr. Hollywood. Okay.
But you got your mom and grandmother on commentary tracks on your DVDs, right?
Yeah, I put my family in stuff. There was a phase where I was doing that just because I thought it was funny. When I had them perform, it was always funny to me because I'd get to see them backstage be nervous and be afraid of bombing and stuff. I felt like if they can't understand what I do, I'll just have them do it and maybe then they'll get a better sense of it.
Well, didn't you say that one of like life's simplest pleasures is watching a comedian friend of yours bomb?
Yeah, but I mean, I should qualify that. It's not that I want to watch my friends do poorly. It's just that there's something really funny in a very specific way.
Yeah.
About being on a show with your friends when someone has a rough time. Usually, if you're on the same show, you're probably going to bomb too. So it's kind of the shared experience of just the futility of bombing together in front of a crowd that doesn't really like any of you.
For a while, you wrote on the Conan O'Brien show. I just wanted to know, like, what's Conan like behind the scenes? Like, watching that documentary kind of seems like a cranky man.
It's funny, I haven't seen that documentary yet, but when I worked for him, Conan was great. He's one of the most well-adjusted, normal people I've met who is also a famous person and is very good at comedy. Conan is like, you can have a real conversation with him. He actually can listen and respond. You know, like, it's a shame that in showbiz, it's a big compliment to say somebody's normal, but I think it is a big compliment, and Conan really is normal. And I think he's really good to the people who work for him. I don't know if that comes across in the documentary about his tour and everything, but people who work for Conan, many of them work for him for years and years, which is really anomalous in showbiz.
No, it's...
And I think it's just a testament to how good he is to people.
Well, yeah, like a lot of the anger he gives is justified, but it's like your dad getting angry at you. It's very real.
That's funny. Yeah, I think there's something very honest about Conan, and he really is such a funny man and a really good writer. He has a very good sense of his own sensibility, which made it really fun to work for him and write for him. And then by the time he went through all the Tonight Show stuff and then went out on tour, I can't even imagine how exhausted he was and what that was all like.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
What the documentary's about. You get to see, like, what happened.
I read your book in the summer, and there was that gigantic palindrome in it. How long did that take you to do?
You know, I had some little ones. Those little ones lying around that are a couple sentences each, and I wrote a couple more for that. And then I had snippets of some larger palindrome because years ago I wrote this other one that was pretty long. I remember thinking, you know, it'd be cool to write one that's longer so I could put it in the book and it would be documented. Like, here's my longer palindrome. So over the course of a few weeks, I worked on it.
But you tweaked it like a car or something. You're just like, this is my baby.
Like a car no one wants to drive.
Well, even like I was halfway through that and I was like, this is hurting my brain to go back and look at it. But it's well done.
I've read that thing like 10 times because I really wanted to make sure there were no mistakes, because you're just opening yourself up to people sending you snarky little messages like, I'm missing a letter A. Like, nice try, dude.
Yeah. So when you look at a word, are you like Tom Hanks and Da Vinci Code? Like all just certain parts light up and you're like, I'm going to rearrange this.
I used to be more like that, but that was before I did stand up. That was back when I was at Jersey Shore trying to avoid Guidos.
So at a certain time, you worked as a proofreader, right?
Yeah, for a while.
And that was, I heard it was overnight. What was that experience like?
Oh, that was pretty rough. That's when I first started, and I just couldn't get any shifts. I couldn't get any work. That was hard. You'd start at midnight, and then you get lunch at 4 a.m., and then you're done at 8 a.m. So I'd go for my lunch break in Manhattan at 4 in the morning in Midtown, and there's a couple delis that are open, and you just go get like a sandwich, sit there, wonder what am I doing with my life?
But you're like Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver, except reading.
Hardcore, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What's the craziest thing you saw like in New York City? Because you grew up there. Like, have you ever seen some crazy crap go down?
I grew up not far from there, obviously, in Jersey. My parents are from there. Craziest thing I saw, that's a good question. I was there for 14 years. Before I left, I didn't see this in person, but it was in the paper, and it just stuck with me because it was so disgusting. There was a story that this is probably 4 years ago. There's a Taco Bell not far from where I lived, the village. And while people were eating in Taco Bell, rats just came out of the wall and ran across the tables and stuff. Like, people freaked out, and they had photographs of it.
I think I saw some YouTube clip of a Taco Bell in New York. Might not be that one, but...
It might be that, I'm sure, because it's infamous. And I was just visiting New York, and I walked by that spot, and it's just an empty room now. There's still nothing there, like, after 4 years. I mean, way crazier things have happened in New York.
Yeah.
But when I think back to New York, like, how many rats I saw in my time there. You just see them in the subway at night, you know, darting across the sidewalk. But when they came out and ran across people's lunch, like, their table.
Yeah.
Really stuck with me. That was pretty nasty.
Have you eaten at Taco Bell since?
No.
Okay. Just wrapping it up here. You're telling jokes in cold places tour is going to start in the new year. I want to know the difference between a touring comedian and the image of a touring rock star, how they're different.
Somebody asked me once if there are comedy groupies. There might be for some comedians. In my experience, comedy groupies were like teenage guys who want to be comedians.
Totally.
Who come up and ask you questions after the show about how you got into comedy or how you got to work at Conan and things like that. So I don't think rock stars, a touring musician, gets that kind of groupie as much as me and some of my friends do.
Oh, like a young kid doesn't take his guitar and say, hey, how did you learn to play that song? Doesn't work.
yeah, it doesn't really go that way so much. That's probably the biggest difference. And also, depending on the comedian again, but most comedians travel alone. You know, my friend Levi's going to open for me on this tour. He's Canadian. His name's Levi McDougall. He's a really funny comic. So we do dates together sometimes. You know, we do shows together. So it's kind of fun to go with a friend. But often I just go alone. So most musicians are going to have, even if they're a solo act, it seems like they usually have a tour manager with them or a roadie or something like that. But with comedy, you can strip it down. So you end up being just kind of a weird drifter traveling around telling jokes.
No, that's awesome. You should do it from the back of a horse carriage.
A top hat.
Yeah. So are you going to be doing a lot of, like, is it just going to be straight up stand-up? Or are you going to have easel stuff and guitar stuff and bells?
I took the bells out of it, but I'm going to do straight stand-up. Guitar a little bit, and some drawings, and, you know, talk to the audience, improvise. Ends up being about 90 minutes.
Excellent. Okay, thanks so much for the interview, man.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks, man.
Awesome. See ya. Bye.
Good one.